Welcome to the Essential Skills for Humaning podcast, where we explore the fundamental abilities and insights that make us better humans. Here's your host, Christina Eanes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Essential Skills for Humaning. I'm Christina Eanes, your host. And for today's episode, our guest is Julie Kratz. She's going to talk to us about being an ally. Welcome, Julie.
Hey, Christina. Thanks for having me.
Well, can you share a little bit about your background before we dive into the topic?
Yeah, I've had my own speaking, consulting, training business focused on diversity, equity, inclusion through the lens of allyship, which we're going to talk about today. I've been doing this work for almost a decade, actually. And before that, I did the corporate thing for about 12 years. So I like to say I checked all those boxes you're supposed to check on that sometimes obvious, sometimes not so obvious career plan, and just feel myself reflected and feel that sense of longing in the workplace that I now get to speak into. So my goal is to help provide the tools that I wish I had had.
Yeah. Well, can we actually start out with the story of what led you to decide to focus on this area in your work?
Yeah. I mean, it's really based on my own lived experience, which, you know, being a woman, a white woman, with a lot of, unearned advantages or privileges, being straight, cisgender, non-disabled. Really, it was really just the gender lens that I struggled with, because you were constantly in all male, presentations, leadership teams, or just inadvertently someone would say or do something that was like very, I didn't have this language back then, was othering of, oh, Julie wouldn't want to go to that. Or, we were going to this sports event, but, it's not, Julie's not able to travel. Just all these assumptions. And it really hit its peak when I had a kiddo. And, you're leaving this kiddo to go to work to feed other so much more purpose at home with somebody that keeps by you when you miss. And so it just became really obvious that the workplace could do better from a gender perspective and a caregiving perspective. But what I didn't know then that I know now is there's tons of other dimensions of diversity and identity that impact people in very different ways, from race to ethnicity, to LGBTQ+, a disability, neurodiversity, age, the list goes on. So as I got curious about these intersections, it became really obvious that we needed to focus on diversity as a whole. And that's where allyship comes in, because it's really supporting somebody that's different from yourself. And that could be across a wide range of lived experiences.
Yeah. So what do folks need to know about allyship to start this conversation?
I think the two things I recommend, because everyone wants to go to the how, the options, right? And if you don't spend a little introspective time thinking intentionally about it, you risk showing up performatively, meaning it's kind of performance that goes up and down the news cycle. I remember everyone that put a black box on social media in 2020, it's that kind of performance that's not long lasting. It's really, quite frankly, not what people want or need. It can create more of a negative association versus the positive one people are hoping for. So the two things to avoid that performative nature of allyship, practice what I call more active allyship, is one, to dial in on your why. Why do you care about this? For me, it goes back to that initial way that I found the work through the lens of my child and the future generations. And I now, I have three kiddos that I want the world to be more inclusive for them. It's not fair that they should have to solve a problem they didn't create. And that's kind of what we're asking them to do right now. So that's really aligned with my life's work and wanting to be a better ancestor for them. So know your why, and your why could be justice, fairness. It could be simple. It could be profound. It could be based on personal relationship or general experience you've had or have wanted to have. And then two is the what. What does allyship mean to you? There's lots of different flavors or dimensions. You know, some of my colleagues have archetypes they've created. I use more of an umbrella approach because I don't think it's a one size fits all. It's very specific to you and choosing your, what I call choose your own adventure, like the books we used to read back in the '80s. Let's just be like doom and gloom. Like, let's not make it fun, right? Because it's not always fun, but make it interesting to you. Make it something you're just deeply curious about and you want to learn more about, because there's so much breadth and depth to this work, which makes it exciting and challenging. So what does it mean to be an ally? Do you want to be a better mentor, a sponsor, an advocate, a coach, a challenger? You know, and it's not a save the day self-proclamation. So caveat here, it's not, here I am to help you out. Like, that's saviorism, not helpful. What we want to do is provide the level of support that someone actually needs. So it's less about what we learned in grade school. If you're a Gen X or really millennial like me, you know, the golden rule, treat others how you want to be treated. It's actually the platinum rule, treat others how they want to be treated. And so asking them what support looks like for them and meeting them where they're at is critical.
I love that. Well, and I almost see this as a continuum. And on one side of those people, like, what is this and why are we doing it? Right. And then the other end, I like how you mentioned the savior ship kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they've been in like, so I'm going to do all these things and they usually get burnt out. And it
last. Yeah. So before we find that balance, can we talk first to those folks that are like, why? Why are we doing this? Can't we just be people?
We all get along.
Yeah. Yeah. The things you've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. And that's why the why is really important, because you need to see. I mean, I think two statistics that are really important and plentifully available and been available for years is the business case associated with diversity. When you have diverse teams, we know innovation rates are higher, decisions are almost 2x like stronger, better, problems are solved more deeply, profitability is like 39% more likely to be higher.
Wow.
There's just lots of money to be left on the table. And think about it as like, really think about a kid. And this really, we're limited by our own lived experiences. But if you think about a child that grows up in an impoverished area that may not have caregivers or adults or role models available to them, like you might have had, where are they likely? What is their life trajectory likely to look like without allyship and support? And what if that kiddo has the best idea and inside them, they have the ability to research cancer? You know, I mean, think about what we're all losing out on when we don't have the insight from somebody because of experience, because of things we can't even control, right? We don't get to pick our biological sex. We don't get to pick our race, ethnicity, where we were born. Those are all unearned advantages or disadvantages just based on luck when you really think about it. And so if you can really think about, what would life be like if I was in a different spot? And I'd love to say, you know, work your way out of it, pull your bootstraps up, which I don't have bootstraps. It doesn't really work like that. You know, think about it. Like when you've had success, it was probably because of somebody that helped you. Like, sure, you did the work, but someone had to put you in a position to take advantage of that. Very rarely do we achieve success just by your own sheer merit. Right? It's usually through allies.
Absolutely. I would probably say never.
Yes. Like,
that's one of the few situations.
You did it all. Everything. Okay. Yeah. Be honest. So channeling that, like the business case and then the human case, we all collectively get more when we're together. And the other piece of data that a lot of people don't realize is people love to tell me, well, my industry isn't diverse. My company just isn't diverse. Like, show me one that is. Nonprofits, largely run by white men. Education, the higher you go up, it's the dominant group. So we really haven't solved this problem anywhere. Maybe a few companies have got good at gender inclusion as of late, but we know that there's a pipeline problem because they promoted like all the women in the middle. Let's get them up there. Yeah, there's a void behind them. So the representation numbers are stagnant. They're not improving as well as people think. Even if you're seeing, you know, Harvard's president be a Black woman, well, until recently, that is often an anomaly. It's not something that's commonplace that's happening everywhere. And so really taking into account, we're not as diverse as we think we are.
Yeah. Well, that's, I love that. That's a great points, period, for moving more towards the middle. So now what about those that are on the savior side? What are some ways they can become a little more balanced, and why should they do that?
I know. And I've tried to do this myself. I've fallen into this trap, and it's just dropping your ego. It's not about me, right? I think it's really step one. And again, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? I don't have all the answers. You know, if I'm white, there's a chance I have no idea what it's like to walk around in black or brown skin, because I can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have a black friend, that's great, but that doesn't make you an expert. I talk a lot with white women that have biracial or multiracial kids, and they obviously feel very compelled for their kids' behalf, but they still don't know what it's like to be their kiddos. And so just park our own egos aside, recognize that your lived experiences are your lived experiences, and think about what support has looked like for you over the years. You know, I don't know, you know, it's different for everybody, but I honestly, I'm not a big fan of people just unleashing advice upon me when they don't know or listen to what it's like to be me or what my real problem is. So, you know, usually like somebody that listens, reflects back, helps me learn how to solve my own problems. That's one of the coaching roles I talk about in allyship. So it's not about you. It's not about your lived experiences. It's about what support looks like for that person. And the last piece, I think, to avoid the saviorism is really be clear with boundaries, like self-care and boundaries. I mean, there are a lot of people that read a lot of books. 2020, 2021, right? I mean, my whole bookshelf exploded, and it's all these DA books. Yes. You know, for me, and I'm, this is the work, my life's work, but you can only read a couple of those a month, because I find myself crying, you know, distraught, emotionally triggered, and our brains just can't take that and our new schedule all the time. Like, there is a limit. Yeah. Know your boundaries. It is not selfish to take care of yourself. And so, because we know that we lost a lot of people with that, they just went in too hard. And it's the long, steady drumbeat that people really want. You know, Dr. Luther King had a great quote about the long arc. It's the long arc. This isn't something that's going to be resolved in my lifetime. It can't. Centuries of inequality. Yeah, it's going to take over a century by the latest forecast to resolve gender and racial disparities. Yeah. And that's just where we're at. So the slow trickle is actually much more impactful than the fire hose approach.
Yes. Building momentum. Mm-hmm. So, Lessa, we will dive deeper into allyship after a short commercial break.
Transform your organization with EANS Training. Our premier interpersonal skills training programs are tailored to enhance your organization's employees in communication, emotional intelligence, leadership, and more. We have a catalog of expert-led courses designed to meet the dynamic needs of today's workforce. With highly engaging in-person, hybrid, and remote sessions, we can help elevate your organization's performance and success. Learn more at EANSTraining.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about allyship, and now let's focus on the individual. So I'm assuming empathy is a big part of allyship. Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about that and maybe other things the individual can do to find that balance in being an ally?
Yeah, I've done a lot of research on this, and there's 10 kind of practices, one of which I already shared with you. And it's the first step is why. Why do you care? And until you articulate a clear why for yourself, your work risks being performative. So start with your why, and I would tap into your emotional connection there. But the second piece is empathy. So great call. It's perspective taking. It's not walking around in someone else's shoes, because you can't really do that. It's trying to take on the perspective of somebody that has a very different set of lived experiences to you, and wondering what that might look like. So it's curiosity, which is one of the other practices. You know, being candid, being vulnerable, really being stepping into charged conversations, managing our emotions, understanding our levels of privilege, and inspiring others around us to do the work too, because that's one of the most profound levels of allyship, when one person can create a domino approach to other people in their lives. And then you have five, it's a multiplier effect. That's when you really start to see allyship take hold. So it may feel like an individual effort, but if you encourage other allies to come in and then they encourage other allies, it's really more of a systemic approach. So I'm a fan of addressing individuals, but also addressing the systems. And I think there's a meeting point that we can come to with critical mass.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. There's almost something here. You mentioned other allies. So I want to look at this from two different perspectives. One from, we'll just call it the cisgender white male. It's like, I don't know what I need to do. I'm going to hurt someone's feelings or step on someone's toes. And then another one from maybe someone who is like maybe neurodiverse female, how do I balance between getting my needs met and making sure that I'm meeting other needs as well as not stepping on any toes, that kind of thing. So why don't we look from the cisgender white male first perspective?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one. And it's a really important one because we are overrepresented with presumably straight, cisgender white males in leadership roles. About 80% of C-suites, 90% of executives tend to fall into that identifier group. Nothing wrong with that. It's just not exactly representative of the populations we hope to serve. So there's a risk. There's a business risk by not mirroring the communities you hope to serve, especially by that, kind of lopsided nature. So it begs the question, how do you get someone to care about something when they think they might have something to lose? Sometimes candid, allies will share with me, I feel like I'm rooting against myself. I feel like people like me aren't going to get promoted or hired now. Which, the zero-sum game mentality just really needs to be addressed. It's not my pie slice versus your pie slice. And marginalized people have known this forever. We lift each other. We lift all of us, right? It's not me versus you. It's not really how the world works. We're primed and socialized to think that, especially in a capitalist society. But it's actually much more, hey, if we lift Christina up, we lift Julie up. It's a both and, not a either or. Because there's more seats at the table and business grows. University. So I think really unpacking that zero-sum game mentality and shifting towards more of a paradox, that both and, which is hard for our brains, cognitive dissonance, we have to kind of replace outdated information. And so that's tricky for those folks. But you're not rooting against yourself. Hiring quotas, promotion quotas, I think those have gotten a bad rap and created, a lot of backlash with the white male community. Those were never best practices. And now with the SCOTUS decision, with affirmative action, that could get you in trouble. So I always encourage people, track who you're hiring and promoting by different demographic data and just set a goal to get better, right? Mm. And always go after diversifying the pool, not promoting the diverse candidate, because that's going to create tokenism and all sorts of weird things when not done authentically. So get your pool diverse for recruiting and promotions, but of course hire or promote the person that's most talented, that has the, meets the objective criteria, because that objective criteria bias just creeps right in.
Yeah. Okay. So now from the perspective of the people who need allies. So one thing that pops into my head is, women supporting women in the workforce. Sometimes they can be so mean to each other and other times supportive. I think it also has to do with that zero sum thought process, but what are some ways that you can get your needs met when you're diverse, as well as make sure you're getting the needs of others without stepping on them?
Yeah. Yeah, what you're referring to is a tug of war bias. It's been well researched between historically marginalized groups, whether that's women, folks of color, where we see each other as the enemy versus the system and us as the enemy. It's a nice destruction tool to uphold systems. It's a socialized trait. It's not biological. Women do not come out of the womb like, I can't wait to. Yeah, that's just not our brains naturally programmed. So it's created. It's a social construct. So I think just acknowledging that social construct and pushing yourself outside of that, like, I'm not going to do that, even if it's tempting sometimes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your example before about, you know, someone that's experiencing neurodiversity, and listeners, neurodiversity, it was a very wide range, autism, ADHD, Asperger's, which have kind of all folded into autism. This field is vastly changing very quickly. So 1 in 44 births in the United States right now are being diagnosed with autism in the early years. So this is going to be a very unique opportunity for businesses to do a better job of employing folks with neurodiversity, because 80% are unemployed. Like, what a huge opportunity with a labor shortage. Anyway, how do you support? How do you become an ally if you're dealing with your own challenges?
Yeah.
And I think that's really an important question about your own personal boundaries. Is, you know, someone with neurodiversity, I have several friends in my network and a mentee, you know, the hours they work look different. Their day structure looks differently. Them staring at a computer screen for 8 hours a day is not feasible, right? And so they have to be very mindful about the energy they choose to expend and on what. And so really, again, dialing in on the why, creating boundaries around it. What you're willing to do, that's a natural extension of your strengths and capabilities, and not pushing yourself to do things that fall outside of that. I think all allies need to be cognizant of that, but especially folks that might have limited capacity. You know, that goes for caregivers too. If you're caregiving for your elders, or you know, have young children that you're the primary caregiver for, your bandwidth is tight. So if you've only got an hour a week to support as an ally, be really intentional about what you choose to do with that hour.
Yeah.
And so really boundering that, practicing your own education, is, you know, using the neurodivergence example, you may very well understand your own identity, but does that mean you understand race, ethnicity, ageism, homophobia? Like, probably not.
Yeah.
These are probably things that you could be a better ally in. So go outside the dimensions of difference you're comfortable with and engage in those areas where you're less comfortable. And I'll just say, one of my mentees has autism, and I learned so much from talking with her, you know, and we think sometimes like I'm giving that hour a month, but I've found the impact to me has been far greater, right? I hope I'm, of course, being helpful to her as well, but I learn a lot in those conversations. And it's helped me, I think, be a better human and connect with my kiddos in a different way too. So, you know, not all allyship is selfless. You get quite a bit out of it too, but you got to be intentional with it.
Yeah, I love it. Now, I know people are going to want to know more. So can you share, I don't know, 60 to 90 second commercial on products and services, and maybe including your TEDx talk as well, that people need to know about?
Yeah. I'm really passionate, as you can probably tell, about allyship. So that's what I'm best known for: diversity and inclusion and leadership, and inclusive leadership are also flavors of that work. And so our team, Next Pivot Point, you can go to nextpivotpoint.com. We actually have free resources there. So I would encourage listeners, we just released our DEI calendar for the year. So cultural celebrations, observances. Please don't make that the only thing you do for DEI, but it is one important part of the work. We're on the heels of, you know, we're in Black History Month right now. Women's History Month's coming up. You know, Pride Month will be here before you know it. Plan ahead. Don't show up performatively and just, you know, rainbow wash your way through it. So that's a great tool you can download and get on. We also have guides like inclusive meeting guides, how to manage your biases. So helpful tools, because we know when people are reminded about those things in just in the moment, they're more likely to activate real time versus a training, especially a one and done training is not going to have a huge impact. So we're a big believer in micro content and tools to put in that toolkit for organizations. And then, the last thing I'd say is Lead Like an Ally is a book I wrote a few years ago, but we have an online course on it. And we are just releasing version 3. So it's only about a couple hours of content, because I push really hard and like 11.5 hours. So it's 25-ish minute videos. There's a couple ones that are a little longer because I couldn't help myself. but it has guides, a discussion guide. It can be on your LMS as an organization, hosted on our LMS. We can discuss anything. You know, it's very commitment action oriented. So that's something I'm really proud about releasing here at the start of 2024.
Oh, nice. I love it. So people are definitely going to need to check those out. What is your final piece of advice before we're done here?
Do something. And when I ask my friends, you know, how can I be a better ally for you? It's resoundingly clear. Keep showing up.
Yeah.
Say something, do something. Even if it's just a small nudge or you don't think it makes an impact, you'd be surprised. It doesn't have to impact millions of people. It could impact one person. Mm. And think about the people who have an impact on your life, you know, your kindergarten teacher, your friend growing up. They may not even know the impact that they had on you. Chances are the same for other people. So there's no action too small. It's often actually the small acts that really make a huge impact. So don't think you have to do it all. Just start with something and then keep going.
Oh, I love it. Oh, thank you so much for joining us today, Julie.
Yeah, thanks, Christina.
Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Skills for Humaning podcast. We hope you've gained valuable insights to enhance your journey as a human being. Remember, practice makes progress. Keep honing those essential skills. And until next time, keep being the best version of yourself. For more resources, visit eanstraining.com.